Hello, and welcome to the Monday Destiny Unveiled Discovery Conversations. This is our last call before the culmination of the Holy Nights on Epiphany, which is Wednesday, January 6th of this week. I'm Viviana Sinclair, and I'm here with my partner, Elijah Rael. Welcome, Elijah.
Yeah, thanks, Viviana, and welcome to everybody that's on the call, and I'm looking forward to what we're going to share together and, of course, what you would all like to share back. Thank you.
Great. So before we get started and to set the mood for our call, I'd like to, Elijah, would you be willing to share the opening verse for tonight from Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul? I find these verses so helpful as like a guiding beacon in my life, and they just seem so resonant, you know, with what's going on with me, and just helped me to get continue year after year after year to deepen my relationship with the being of the earth. Go ahead, Elijah.
And when I am in the spirit depths, within my soul's deep ground, vain notions of my self-bound nature are filled from the heart's own worlds of love with powers of fire from the word of worlds.
Great. So here's where he first uses the word love in the Calendar of the Soul for, I think, in the cycle of the year since Easter time. And I like to think of these 40 days between Epiphany, which is coming up on Wednesday, and actually that, you know, is the whole mood of it is developed through this week. And Epiphany, in Elijah's and my imagination anyway, lasts for 40 days because the Epiphany is traditionally celebrated as both the Three Kings Day and the baptism of Jesus by John in the Jordan. And after the baptism, he goes out into the wilderness of his soul and faces the tempters, and it takes him 40 days to really come to terms with earthly life and to, in a certain sense, and to develop the powers of love to bring it right down into the life body and the physical body. So for me, this 40-day journey culminates on Valentine's Day, just happens to culminate on Valentine's Day, which is also traditionally about love, and maybe we can lift that into a kind of a different understanding of it as we go along through our journey over the next 43 days or so. So up until now, in our conversations on these Monday nights, we've been creating a context for our journey through the 4 weeks of Advent and the 13 Holy Nights of Christmas from what Elijah and I call the New Christmas Conference Paradigm, initiated by Rudolf Steiner, from December 24th to January 1st of 1923-24. And tonight, we're going to take a slightly different approach as we near the Festival of Epiphany. And if we look back at our journey this far, we've come through the four trials of Advent and explored how Rudolf Steiner can help us reframe our relationship to the four kingdoms of nature through his lecture series, Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers, where he's bringing the mysteries of the past into a new light in the present for us to really hone our relationship with the elements, and which he gave out during Advent, during his time. And then we came to Adams and Eve Day on the 24th of December, when there's this remembrance in the ethers of the fall from paradise. And during the fall, we began to become self-conscious and left our twin soul, who would be named Jesus, in the spiritual world, who would incarnate much later. And during the evening of the 24th of the Christmas conference, the Paradise Play was performed to recall this deep spiritual historic event that all of us bear within us, though most of us, it's fairly unconscious. Rudolf Steiner was one of the few that could raise this whole process of humanity's journey from the beginning into consciousness, and I just feel so blessed to have come across his work and be able to bear, you know, bring that to consciousness in my life, even if it's just reimagining what he's brought forth. So then after the 24th, we began our journey through the Festival of Christmas and the Holy Nights. And on the 25th, we explored the birth of our spirit child and the entrance of our brother soul, Jesus, into earthly life for the first time in human history. So here was somebody, a being, who brought this purity, this innocence, and had no karma from previous earthly lives in his soul. And we all have that remembrance within us. And for me, that's really the qualities of this spirit child that is longing to emerge from us in and become matured to spirit self through the journey of the Holy Nights, which we're about to come to a close on. So during this time also, Elias shared from Rudolf Steiner's lecture, World History, which were given during the evenings of the Christmas conference. And during these lectures, Rudolf Steiner shared his perception of his own evolutionary journey with his soul companion, Ida Wegman, from the beginning of recorded history. So during the day, Rudolf Steiner was sharing practical endeavors for the refounding of the Anthroposophical Society, and he planted as a new seed, the foundation stone meditation. He gave it out to the members at that time, which articulates the human being's relationship to the four elemental kingdoms beneath us, or the elemental beings of nature. He addresses them and each one of the spiritual hierarchies and how they relate to our soul forces of thinking, feeling, and willing. And it's with this ladder, so to speak, that Rudolf Steiner creates through this meditation, that we're able to bring this spirit child and to raise this spirit child into the awakening of spirit self. So then during that process, right in the middle of the Holy Nights, is New Year's Eve, where we were encouraged to offer our initiatives to the higher hierarchies and hold possibility to find ourselves in the sun temple with each other as we share our destiny initiatives with one another on what Rudolf Steiner called the Christ Festival Day on New Year's Day. So this whole time, if we follow this zodiacal path that starts in the feet, where Rudolf Steiner talked about in the Foundation Stone Meditation, the meditation starts in the limbs and moves to the heart and lungs and then to the head. And this is the path from Pisces to Aries, or from the hands and feet to the head. And so now, as we approach the sixth, we approach the region of the ram, and the higher chakras, which Steiner describes as the region from which the Christ descended into the bodily sheath of Jesus at the baptism by John. So that's what we're going to explore tonight a little bit, this this season of Epiphany and the difference between that which is celebrated on the 24th and the 25th with the Nathan Jesus, and what is it that is different about this? Eli, I'm hoping that you've done so much great research about this, the distinction between these two beings and this mystery that is an open secret in the Bible, and I'm wondering how you can help us understand that a little bit better from what you've been able to research.
Yeah, I'd like to proceed my response first by looking back at the foundation that Rudolf Steiner himself had laid when he started publicly lecturing in his 40th year of life. And you could approximately at let's say the year 1900, but he lays this foundation in lecturing all over Europe for 7 years before he comes in to lecturing on the Gospels. And so for us this evening, the lectures we'd really turn to would be Matthew's Gospel, because in Matthew's Gospel we have the story of the three kings. Now in Luke's Gospel we don't. But if we look back again to Matthew's Gospel, we have 42 generations going all the way back to Abraham. But in Luke's Gospel, there's 77 generations going all the way back to Adam. So if we focus on Matthew's Gospel with these 42 generations, and the whole story is really different than Luke's Gospel. In Matthew's Gospel, we have a star that appears that guides three magi. Now, the three magi really come from, or as initiates, come from the past cultural ages. We can look back to ancient India, we can look back to Persia, and then we could look back to Egypt. But the truth is also that these three initiates were pupils of the reborn Zarathustra in the 6th century. And there, they were pupils of the incarnated Zarathustra. One of them was Pythagoras. The other was Daniel the prophet. And the third was the king Cyrus the Great. So if we move the clock forward, we really find here's this imaginative picture. And again, it's because there's mystery wisdom here, it's hidden. But it's only through Rudolf Steiner's lecturing on this Matthew Gospel that we start to see this incredible picture emerging that it's the I-being of Zarathustra in the spiritual world, or we could really say in our present conversation, in the moon sphere, guiding these three magi. And if we look at the magi, we can see they carry with them symbols of these past cultural ages that they want to lay at the feet of the reborn master. So we have Melchior, Balthazar, Casper, and Melchior brings the gold, which is a symbol of wisdom. And then Balthazar, frankincense, a symbol for sacrificial offering. And then the last, Casper, who brings myrrh, relating to dying and death. So they bring this to this Jesus child that's born in a palace. He's not born out in a shepherd's stable. He's a prince. He's a king. And then the gospel accounts really tell us nothing more about them after their meeting. But then again, we have the account in Luke's gospel later But we do have mention in there, in Matthew's gospel, of the flight into Egypt. And the flight into Egypt is a veil for the fact that the Zarathustra individuality needs to go and recover something that was left there in Egypt by Moses, his etheric body. And he only comes back to Israel at a much later date. And then we have the scene in the temple in Luke's gospel where Jesus of Nazareth in Luke's gospel is in the temple, and spiritually the Zarathustra being is physically there, but he forsakes his vehicles, and with his ego organization and his eye being, he descends into the soul. He incorporates himself into the Jesus of Luke's gospel, the Nathan Jesus, and then the transformation occurs, because what Zarathustra carries within him is all the accumulated wisdom of ancient India, ancient Persia, and ancient Egypt. It now resides in the soul of the Nathan Jesus. And then we don't hear much about him. In fact, in the gospel accounts, we don't hear about him until the baptism in Jordan. But luckily, years later for us, after the four gospels were given, Rudolf Steiner then in turn gives us one of the most open secrets of all. He lectures on the fifth gospel. And he talks about the conversation that Jesus has roughly in his 29th, going toward his 30th year with his mother. And it's about the transformation that occurred within his soul when he was 12. He knows that something happened there. And she can't really answer the question, but she does send him to John. Of course, in the fifth gospel, it's much more intimate, but I'm just drawing it in more broad strokes. So he finds his way to John, and then John, in turn, baptizes him, or, put it this way, he holds him under the water until the point occurs where he could almost drown and the sheets separate. And this is the moment that the Christ being comes out of the moon sphere, descends right down into the vehicles of Jesus of Nazareth. And then, of course, Viviana talked about this, that he finds himself in the loneliness of soul within the vehicles. And he spends 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. So I think those are incredible pictures to carry with us.
Yeah, so I remember you saying something about Moses and leaving his etheric body there, and Moses was a pupil of Zarathustra, right, in an earlier incarnation, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, and I just, and Rudolf Steiner said that Moses actually did bear within him the etheric body of the Zarathustra being, and that's why he was able to perceive the burning bush and experience Christ in the elements before he actually incarnated into the body of Jesus of Nazareth, the two Jesus of Nazareths later, and experienced this speaking of the I am, the I am, I am, the I am, and here he has this experience of this most intimate encounter, and the fire element is really there, and I just find it, I mean, the first time I heard Rudolf Steiner talking about two Jesus children, it just seemed like too far-fetched to really, I just had a really hard time wrapping my soul around it, but as I've lived with the imaginations for years, it really makes so much sense, and things are so much more intimately and delicately complex than really they appear to be on the surface, and we're all very interesting beings with the capacities that we have. And so there's this two souls become one, this soul of this primal being without any karma, without any kind of experience, but bringing this purity and this innocence and this love. And then there's this other Jesus child born in a king, you know, the first is born in a stable with shepherds, and there's this, the angels are you know, praising God, and there's this real purity in the air. And with the other birth, it's a whole different kind of soul gesture, and there's a majesty and a wisdom and also, I believe, this being bears suffering, a knowledge of suffering, of human suffering in his soul. And then there's this merger, and like you're saying, in the 12th year. I think it's a very fascinating study. And what I'd like to kind of bring it forward to is that, well, Elijah, did you have more to share before? I wanted to bring some elements from spiritual economy, but I wondered if you had more to share about the temptation and what went on in the wilderness leading up to during those 40 days.
Yeah, I could say a little bit about that. Imagine, here's the Christ being knitting himself, you know, immediately with the ego organization of Jesus of Nazareth. But below him, or surrounding him, is the astral body and the etheric body. And when he's in the wilderness, he immediately encounters Lucifer and Ahriman. And first, Lucifer tempts him. And then Ahriman and Lucifer tempt him. And Ahriman feels that Lucifer is not helping with the temptation. And he, in turn, comes back a third time at the Christ himself. And he says to him, "Turn gold into bread, if thou wouldst boast of divine power." Now, he doesn't know yet, because he's recently, let's say, involved with Earth evolution. He doesn't know yet, or let's put it this way, he doesn't have the experience of working for the daily bread, but humanity does. And some of what I'm sharing here is out of my work in progress on a history of coinage. And it, of course, early coinage all the way up until nearly the 20th century. In fact, it was 1933 that almost all coinage consisted of gold, silver, and copper. And so gold has this very, very special relationship with the Earth and with Earth evolution, and of course connected with money. So it's somewhat of a mistranslation if you only hear it as turning stones, because any stone is not necessarily worthwhile. But gold is incredibly significant. And that's because in an earlier pass of Earth's own evolution, the sun was still united with the Earth. And within that, luciferic beings had their existence within that ancient sun period. And so when the sun left, the beingness, so to speak, of the luciferic beings was still permeating the liquid gold. And so after the sun left, the remnants that were still within the Earth condensed down into the actual metal gold. And the reason why we like the gold, is it stimulates our astral body when it's put in front of us. It's a very amazing metal. But I just wanted to share that because I know, Viviana, you had some other things also to share, but I thought that I'd share a little bit there.
Well, I just see, one of my favorite lecture series is The Principle of Spiritual Economy by Rudolf Steiner, and I don't know if any of you have read it, but it is so helpful in understanding some of these complex mysteries. And in there, he describes this preparation, you know, this of the spiritual world in relationship to some of these key individuals, like Zarathustra, who teaches Moses and Hermes, and they bear within them his etheric body and astral body, and there's this relationship that the Christ being then has as he goes into these sheaths that have been developed by the Zarathustra being. There's actually an activation that happens during the mystery of Golgotha, whereby the sheaths, including the ego of the Jesus of Nazareth, I don't know how to address him, Elia, like, because these two souls become one, almost, the Nathan Jesus and the Solomon Jesus, right? I mean, they have, does the Luke Jesus leave, or how does that work? I just need your help in getting a clear imagination of this, because I think it's important for us to hold as imagination as we're nearing Epiphany.
Well, the I being of Zarathustra leaves. What's left behind is, and the I being of the Nathan Jesus leaves. So what's there, it's like there's a moment that they're there and then they're not there. And at that not there moment, that's when the Christ being envelops the fourfold organization, takes hold of the ego organization. So at that point, it becomes that individuality or that being becomes Christ Jesus. And that's what he's referring to as the I being or the ego of Jesus of Nazareth that can be replicated. Same with the astral body and same with the etheric body. And because initiates worked into those vehicles, they don't dissolve like ordinary human beings' astral body or etheric body after death.
Yeah, I think that's really key. And I'd just like to read something out of The Principles of Spiritual Economy because it just helps tie in what we're talking about here and helps us come to an imagination, I think, of our own relationship to these bodies and how they're actually there for us to tap into. I don't know if that's the right word, but to, as we develop these faculties of imagination, inspiration, and intuition that are the qualities of initiation, these bodies, the etheric body and astral body of the Jesus being, can become available to us so that we can actually become a Christ bearer too. And I guess that would be the thing that we could humble ourselves toward every Epiphany after having gone through these trials of Advent and through the Holy Nights to see, okay, so how do I align myself in such a way that I too can be not I, but Christ in me. And so here Rudolf Steiner says, he says, many copies of the etheric and astral bodies and the ego of Jesus of Nazareth exist in order to be incorporated in the preliminary bearers of the Christ principle. Everything connected with the Christ principle is so momentous that humanity can only grasp it little by little. And then he goes on to say that St. Augustine, for example, bore within him a copy of the etheric body of Jesus of Nazareth. And once you know that, you will be able to appreciate his life, his errors, and his accomplishments, because his ego and astral body were left to their own resources, and only in his etheric body did his great mystical gift come to life. So he grappled with his own soul and his ego, and was, you know, wrote the confessions, and it was only his etheric body that had this purified eternal wisdom within it. But he struggled to align both, you know, his ego and his astral body in relationship to it, is what he's saying. So, and then he says St. Francis of Assisi and Thomas Aquinas had copies of the astral body of Jesus of Nazareth woven into their souls, and it is this fact that allowed them to be such dynamic teachers. And he says they worked from a sphere in which Christ had once lived. So they're bearing the astral body within them. And he's giving the story of how it actually came about that St. Thomas Aquinas came to bear. And lightning struck. He was in the room when lightning struck and killed his little sister. And he happened to be standing there, but he didn't get hit. And he says that Rudolf Steiner is recounting that Thomas Aquinas interpreted this lightning bolt next to him as to the effect that the elemental forces were necessary to help him take up the copy of the astral body of Jesus of Nazareth. And then he points to Elizabeth Thuringer, who also had this imprint. So then Zarathustra, or Jesus of Nazareth, is one of the three masters of the Rosicrucians, and many copies of his ego, that is the ego in which the Christ Spirit himself had dwelled, can be found in the spiritual world. The copies of the ego of Jesus of Nazareth are waiting for us in the spiritual world to be utilized for the future evolution of humanity. People who endeavor to strive upward to the heights of spiritual wisdom and love are candidates for these copies of the ego of Jesus of Nazareth. They become bearers of the Christ, true Christophori. On this earth they shall be the heralds of his second coming. So I just would like to, I mean, it's obvious from, to me, Arelai and I both really feel that he's alluded to his past incarnation as Thomas Aquinas, Rudolf Steiner has, and he has this intimate insight into this penetration of the astral body of Jesus into Thomas Aquinas, and we really can see this bearer of the ego of the Jesus being in Rudolf Steiner, because it is, who else is telling us in a language that we can understand and follow imaginatively about the reappearance of Christ in the etheric, but Rudolf Steiner? Rudolf Steiner is really, really the one who began to articulate this and point to the years, in fact, that the etheric Christ would begin to appear to human souls. And so from my understanding of what we just read, it's as though these imprints of the etheric body, the astral body, and the ego of Jesus are there in the spiritual world waiting for us when we become. And he says later, or in a different place, I don't have it open to that right now, but let me see here. Yeah, he says that there isn't really anything that we need to do except for to know these things, that once we start bearing these imaginations within us and we start holding possibility and inwardly asking questions and humbling ourselves to the possibility, that then something begins to ripen in our souls. And of course he gave out, you know, the tremendous exercises in knowledge of higher worlds and the karmic relationships exercises too, but I just feel that it's important to bring these things into right relationship with our own I being and our own journey through epiphany, and to hold possibility for something greater than ourselves to begin to work in us as we go out from epiphany over the next 40 days and meet our own trials and our own temptations as we do so. So, Laya, do you have anything to share or comment?
Well, I do. When you shared about Thomas Aquinas and bearing within the astral body, and if you think of in the human life or the human body, or if you think of the human being in its ninefold constitution, the threefold body, the threefold soul, and then in turn the threefold spirit, the astral body is connected intimately with the sentient soul. And the sentient soul in any incarnation is the accumulation of all the past experiences from each incarnation in their soul life. And then the spiritualization of the sentient soul yields the spirit self. And that's why I think it was important to share that Christmas verse and the example we were giving, that Rudolf Steiner was asking us each Christmas, during the Holy Nights, to pass the guardian of the threshold, enter the spiritual world, and there we find our spirit self. It's not a child. It's a individuality that's become a self, a spirit self. So I just wanted to share that because I think it's a beautiful imagination that you've just shared with us, Viviana.
Yeah, great. So I when you said the Christmas verse, just now when you were alluding to, you said that you thought it was important to share the Christmas verse. Which verse were you talking about? The spirit child?
I feel the spirit child set free from spell in womb of soul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just that verse is like an archetype. The holy word of worlds has in the heart's clear light begotten, born into heaven's own fruit of hope, which joyfully grows toward farthest worlds out of my being's godly ground. That's right out of Rudolf Steiner's own spirit self. That's what's speaking there. And that's what he brought into the Christmas conference. It was the word of worlds that he heard that he was able to give us back, the foundation stone meditation. And in the original version, he does call on the hierarchies. In the one that's in print, for most people, they're removed. Those calling on the angels, archangels, and archai is removed. But we have a version that we put back in that probably by next Christmas, we'd really like to be able to share with others.
It's already been shared. It's on the recording page of the, I've already shared it with everyone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. Well, dear, maybe now we could, I think it's time we could open up the lines to our friends and listeners, and let's develop, if we can, a conversation or answer some questions.
Yeah, so everybody is in charge of their own microphone there, so that it would be nice to hear. We have a small group. There's seven of us. Only so if Eli and I have been doing all the talking, it would be nice just to hear if what we're saying makes sense to you and if it follows. How does this, Real Steiner said there's such a wisdom in the festivals and how they're actually laid out, and even though it may not have been done self-consciously, there's such a richness and a wisdom here that when we can follow it, it can really begin to help hone our own soul capacities, I feel. So I'm wondering if other people feel the same way, or what your experience of these imaginations that we've shared over the last weeks, how they've, you know, how they live with you between calls, and what we shared tonight, does it ring true for you? Anybody want to share?
Hello, Viviane, it's Kathleen. I just wanted to say hello. I was, sorry, about half an hour late joining you, so I'm just sinking into it now. So thank you. I wanted to say hello.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome. So you've been on just for the last...
25 minutes or so, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Great. I came in at Moses.
Uh-huh. I'm good.
Maybe I came in with Moses. I don't know yet.
Great.
This is Carol, and I would just want to say that, yes, these imaginations are so rich, and there is so very much in this time from Advent through the Holy Nights, and I find that, you know, each year it just does, like, more pieces come together, and it is such an incredible story of, you know, what has actually happened in the whole evolution of humanity, and all of these, you know, different what pieces and characters, and, you know, how Rudolf Steiner played such a role in bringing us to where what we need now. And I think for me, I've always had this sense of, it's just, you know, simple me, I can only maybe just learn about it a little bit, but it's been very hard to imagine actually, you know, I'm part of it in being in this whole process. And so I feel like all of this has just brought it a little closer to my feeling it as something that I am participating in.
Well, great. That's beautiful sharing, Carol. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess the thought that came to me, too, while you were talking, Carol, is I was hearing Rudolf Steiner saying how important it was that the Christmas conference be lived as an ongoing event. I mean, he was meaning throughout the year and as something that is unfolding, that it was actually a turning point in time itself of humanity. I mean, Rudolf Steiner being the person who is articulating this humanity's journey and this turning back toward the spiritual world with an awake consciousness and a spiritual scientific consciousness in how he was able to articulate things. And I'm thinking, Elia, it might be good to explore how we do make that alive. How do we continue that as we go forth from here, as we're leaving this, you know, the Christmas conference ended on January 1st, on New Year's Day, and then he went ahead and actually on January 4th, which is today, the anniversary of his beginning lectures on Rosicrucianism and modern initiation. So he began his practical medical work with Ida Wegman, where they started anthroposophical medicine. So he began working right off with initiative with Ida Wegman and giving these lectures on Rosicrucianism and modern initiation. But then he just sat, you know, really pleaded with everyone to continue with this Christmas conference as something not in the past, but something that is an ongoing spiritual reality. And Elia, I'm wondering if you have any insights or imaginations as to what that looks like so that it can become something that we bear within ourselves throughout the year and that we steal within ourselves during this last, you know, during this time, but that it becomes a power or a something that we planted now within ourselves that can bear us through the coming months.
Yeah, he actually performed a mystery deed in the sense that he was literally, for him, and off, you know, we hear it and remember from many participants that there was no more veil between the physical and the spiritual, that there was transparency that was created by him, and he was asking us, saying that from this point on, meaning from the Christmas conference on, that he wanted us as anthroposophists to work directly from the spiritual right into what we were doing outwardly. And that may be hard for us to hear presently, but you have to imagine it's a small group of 800 participants that were representatives of the whole of the Anthroposophical Society at the time. So in a sense, they were the core group. They were the golden core group. And he himself was able to execute what he did, especially in relationship to karmic relationships, because in a dialogue with Michael, he was able, through Michael's recognition, to actually bind Ahriman or force him from the field, literally probably the inner field of his own spiritual bodies, so that he would be allowed to speak. And that's what he did. He now actually took up his real task in life. Anthroposophy was really meant for Carl Julius Schorer, the reincarnated Plato, to bring anthroposophy forward into the world. But he wasn't able to do it. Rudolf Steiner took up that task, but it's from the Christmas conference forward that his true task as the great teacher of reincarnation and karma began. And it's tragic that when he stepped onto that path, he had a very limited amount of time left. And we know that he feverishly worked at what he had to give. And in a sense, the golden jewel of the Christmas conference is his ability to complete that cycle on Rosicrucianism and modern initiation. Because the Rosicrucians were, in a sense, the last of the initiated individualities pre-15th century. They were able to establish their spirituality on the earth in a time, in a period of time, where there was no clairvoyance or initiates on the earth. Christian Rosenkreuz himself could appear to the seven pupils that were working out of Rosicrucianism. But he gives these glowing stories of the encounter of the pupils seeking out the Rosicrucian master. And he talks about the piety, the piousness, the sun that literally streamed out of their hearts when the pupil had met the master. And they dialogued. And then came that time period from 15th to the 20th century, or the 19th century. And that's the time period where Michael does not rule. Gabriel rules. But it's only when the Michael age dawns that something new now comes into being. Think of a giant rock thrown into a cosmic lake through Aristotle. And this Aristotelianism flowed into the world. But in 1879, it hit the shore. It was no longer a viable path to take up. And then here's Rudolf Steiner taking up his own outline of philosophy of freedom. So he's going to step onto the world stage. So I think when we look at that year 1924, what we can best do to let's say, in this following year we're in doing the Christmas conference, sure, we want to still stay with, I think, the glow of what we've gained here, but I think the attempt should be made for all of us to, in the coming Christmases, holy nights, to take up these thoughts each year and feel that the spiritual world really is there, that there isn't a separation, that the veils have become very thin. So how have some of the rest of you taken that up, or do you have an idea, or do you have questions about what could be done or what you'd like to do?
Alaya, Vivian, hi.
Hi, Bibi.
I really appreciate this, and it sparked something. What I wanted to mention was it came about from that conversation that Alaya, I think you touched on. I think I have this one right, the 12th year when Jesus of Nazareth talked to his mother, and there was something when I read it some time ago that was really a tremendous conveyance of something of spirit, I think, between them. And so I really, really was fascinated that came up tonight. And I just wanted to ask a question, but I want to give you a little background so I can ask it, so if you can kind of tolerate.
Yeah, please.
I went back to my Isis Mary Sophia book and started reading in that for our Monday night sessions. And when I did, I think I don't have the book right here with me, but I think it's page 81 that he talks about reading the book of John, and that bringing in of the Holy Spirit. And I think he mentions in that same text on that page about Mary Sophia. And so in efforts to do our work before this time frame, gone back to reading John, which happens to be my very favorite book, just a personal note. But in that, listening tonight, I grabbed the Gospel of St. John book, and on page 178, this gets over to, I think, and this is where my question is, of what you were talking about, the copy of the astral, possibly in the etheric. And I had previously, some years ago, noted where it says in the bottom of the first paragraph here, when one considers the words know thyself in the Greek, they do not mean that you stare into your own inner being, but that you fructify yourself with what streams into you from the spiritual world. Know thyself, in quotes, means fructify thyself with the content of the spiritual world. And because of what, Alion, you were talking about earlier about this copy, and to know that it's there and to imagine or contemplate the accessibility or even the knowledge of it, and then to contemplate that, my question is, do you think that relates to this sentence, fructify thyself with the content of the spiritual world?
Well, I think absolutely, and that's why I was saying earlier that Rudolf Steiner was asking the members to, whatever they did, to feel that it was coming out of the spiritual world, because he himself reached this new stage of being with the spiritual world. All these imaginations in the three lecture cycles, it is so amazing, you guys, to go and take up a reading of Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers. Think of it, there's like 12 lectures. And if you just took one lecture and then unpacked it, so to speak, or digested or attempted to digest it, or bring it as strong as you can into your imagination, because he's drawing all those imaginations right out of the Akasha. And what we do on the calls, it's like we're like a paragraph with our calls in relationship to a whole cycle or a whole one lecture. There's so much that's in there. Mm-hmm. But I would encourage you, even though Christmas is past, take up Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers or World History, or even now, you're still within the Holy Knights, Rosicrucianism and Modern Initiation. Because in that, he's really sharing Christian Rosenkreuz's work. And Christian Rosenkreuz and his host came into the Schrinerii during the Christmas conference. They were there spiritually because of what he was doing. You know, they wanted to listen to Rudolf Steiner's own karmic research about himself that started in World History. Because it led from 3000 BC right up into the Greek era. And that's where the intellectual soul is unfolding. So there's this maturity that was developing from those incarnations with Rudolf Steiner, that as an individual in the consciousness soul age is already unfolding the life of the spirit self.
I'm wondering if that answered your question, Bibi. I think what Elia is saying and what I'm hearing in your question are a little bit different things, but they tie right together, because I think what I heard you asking about is these imaginations, can we come to an intimate connection with the spiritual world through entertaining these imaginations of these copies of the etheric body, the astral body, the ego of Jesus, just knowing that they're there, that is all. That is also a revelation from the spiritual world by Rudolf Steiner. And yes, I think that that's what he says, that just waking up to these thoughts will enable us to begin to move in that direction and to open ourselves to the possibility of coming into relationship. And I do believe that taking on, being able to embody those, I can't, you know, claim to have a path to do that, because I think it's going to be individual for everybody, but Rudolf Steiner has given us so many different paths to get there, and I love that you brought up John tonight and the Gospel of John, because he was Christian Rosenkreutz. I mean, he in his further incarnation, that is who John became after his incarnation as John, and he's with us as every century. Rudolf Steiner says that he's there with us. He can incarnate. Maybe, Eli, you could talk about this a little more, but at will, and he was there at the cross. He was the only disciple who was there at the cross with Mary, the three Marys, actually, and Jesus asked John to take her into himself and for her to embrace John as her son. From that point forward, that they were to go together, and they did. They went together, and there was a transformation, I think, in both of the two of them as witnesses to the mystery of Golgotha. But Bibi, I'd like to hear from you whether if what Eli and I shared got to the heart of your question.
Yeah, I think it's great, and it's great to know the surrounding about John being Christian Rosenkreutz. I was not aware of that, but I have been trying to stay with the Mary Sophia theme. And it's so wonderful to have your input during this time to bring about the fullness of this huge activity that I feel like just scratching the surface of personally. So yes, I'm very grateful, and I think it's most helpful. So thank you so much.
Good. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your question. Good question. Because I think it's important what you were just asking. And yeah, I just think this love, this capacity for love right now, and cultivating this capacity for listening from our hearts. And in the handout that I gave that is on the page with the recording links about our heart intelligence, from it had some quotes from the Heart Math Institute, and I also referred to a workshop that I went to with John McManus, who was talking about our breathing and our presence in our speaking. He teaches speech from an anthroposophically trained perspective, and he says that if we're too much in our heads or too much in our wills, that our speaking isn't balanced, that we don't find the balance in our heart, and our breathing gets cramped. and our breathing isn't as full as it would be if we were balanced between head and will in the heart. And so this Heart Math Institute that's come out, I bought the software because it's a software program that actually gives you feedback to see whether you're in heart coherence or not, but it so dovetails with Rudolf Steiner's exercises for developing the heart chakra, and the outcome of developing that heart chakra and how it permeates the whole being and begins to regulate all of the chakras in a new way. There's a transformation that begins to happen, and I think it's we can cultivate it. By I had to cultivate it in myself. I was surprised at how little heart coherence I had when I hooked myself up to this software. And it took some reflection and some practice, and to bring me into coherence, I needed to say the Lord's Prayer. And when I brought myself into a state of reverence, which is what the first stages in Knowledge of Higher Worlds is, when Rudolf Steiner talks about how it's important to, first of all, have a faith that there is a spiritual world, and then a reverence to life and to the mysteries of life. And he also says that we can't really approach anything or know anything without first loving it first, and that our heart really needs to be engaged. And so I just wanted to also bring that up, that we basically it's putting our attention there, that in the present moment, like right now, like is our awareness in our hearts, or is it in our head, or are we doing something? And it's like the heart can really, I think this is such a great time, a great opportunity right now during these next 40 days to hone that. And one of the exercises for developing heart cognition from Knowledge of Higher Worlds is positivity. And if we look at the news and we look at the wars and we look at the suffering in the world, and we go back to Mary, who held all these things in her heart, she didn't really do anything outwardly as far as she's there as a presence all the time, and she's witnessing and she's holding these things in her heart, and she has an inner knowing of and a trust in the spiritual world and a trust in what's happening, even though she sees how painful it is for Jesus when he comes to speak to her. He pours his heart and his soul out to her, and she holds it in her heart, basically. So I think this question of heart coherence and heart awareness is so important, and that we turn our thoughts toward the positive, even though outwardly there seems to be so many things under attack right now with the earth and with Fukushima still dumping into the oceans, and with the life body of the earth itself, to hold these imaginations that Rudolf Steiner has given as a positive impulse, not that we're Pollyanna about it, not that we don't acknowledge the pain, because we do. Mary acknowledged the pain and she held the pain, but she also saw another possibility and knew in her heart that she had a faith and a trust. So I wanted to share that and bring that in to as an addition to what you brought, Bibi. So thank you for bringing Mary into the conversation. conversation.
Well, thank you for that. That's wonderful, too. Thank you. Very helpful.
Good. Anybody else have any reflections or further?
Hi, this is Sonia, and I just wanted to thank you for what you've done, even though I was only able to participate the last 2 weeks. I guess I only knew about it that, 2 weeks ago, but it has enriched for me this season, which is holy for me, and I always do my best to have some type of observance. My question, though, is will you do it every year, or do you do the other festivals as well?
Good question, and I'd like to just say I'm not sure if we'll do it again. I don't know quite yet, but I'm guessing we will, because we are really committed to a path to the 100-year anniversary of the Christmas Conference, which is coming up in 2023-24. And we feel it's important to have that heartbeat connection. I'm not sure what form it will take next year. I don't know that yet until we see how this year unfolds, but I'm guessing we will do something. And the reason why we inaugurated these Monday conversations is because we do want to have it be an ongoing event and not just something that happens at Christmas, but how do we carry each other through the cycle of the year. And yes, we're going to, after tonight, we're going to meet twice a month rather than once every week, because once every week is pretty intense and a lot of people are busy and it gets to be a bit much. So I think twice a month is a good rhythm, and we're just doing this as kind of a pilot project to see if we have a contribution to make and if people are receptive to it. And so we appreciate you coming and listening and sharing with us. And yes, we will continue. And yes, we will address the other festivals as we go forward. And we're committed to this every other week, and at least until Easter. And then we'll take another look and see where to go from there. So it's a bit like testing the waters and seeing what works, and we enjoy your feedback. It means a lot to us, so thank you.
Well, and thank you.
Anybody else want to share?
Well, I might just ask. So there will be another call 2 weeks from tonight. And is there a topic that maybe, we can kind of be on the same page a little bit beforehand too?
Yeah, that'll be Monday the 18th. Of January, and I think what we're going to take up is we've talked about it some, and we may shift, but so far I think what we're going to take up is biography work and the human life, and looking at, because we're going to have one more call this month, and then it'll start into February. And into February is Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner's birthday is in February, and his death day is in March. So probably between February and March, we'll look at his biography in light of some of what we've talked about prior to that, so we want to kind of set the ground for it and then look at his life as an example. And because if we look at Epiphany up until Easter, the whole tableau, so to speak, of the biography of Jesus, and then the 3 years of Christ's life are, we can walk that path from now until Easter, until the resurrection. So we'll be weaving in some of those themes too, just as we did at Christmas time. And then looking at our own books of life and seeing how that, what Rudolf Steiner gave us as help to really identify our destiny tasks and our work in the world. So that's kind of the theme we're heading toward. Elijah, do you want to say anything more?
Well, I want to ask who's on the call about maybe what you might carry within yourselves as a burning interest for a topic, although we...
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because, I mean, we can have our plan, but at the same time, I'd like to know what you guys might want to address or speak about. I mean, Carol, what would you like to see take place?
Well, I end up being interested in all of it. And just what Viviana said sounds very interesting to me. And yes, we are studying in one of our study groups, the Karma Lectures right now. And I'm, you know, wanting to more and more get a sense of what, you know, initiatives are part of my destiny, and I sometimes feel like I'm getting some, you know, clarity on that. And so I will be interested in all of it, but the whole things of our biography and, you know, really being able to find our destiny is very interesting.
Yeah, well, just on a personal note, I guess I could interject that I started outwardly doing biography work, human biography work, about 1990.
Mm-hmm.
1990, 2000, 2010, 2015. Oh, wow, is that 25 years ago?
25 years ago.
I'm going to be an old man.
Well, I've been in my body for a while. I'm not saying how old I am. I've just been in my body for a few years. But biography work is very interesting, and of course the biography of Rudolf Steiner is incredibly interesting, and then of course the karmic relationships. I mean, that's the, you know, he takes us up the mountain there to really get these vast views. And there's a reason for that. He really wanted us to come into a focus on the four streams within the anthroposophical movement itself, and this history that's there, that to glean from it how the spiritual world works through individualities. And so, you know, those 72 lectures are very intriguing, and you have to really include world history in the light of anthroposophy with them.
Okay.
So you ultimately have about 80-some lectures on karma. And he wants us to come away from that to get that, what is that picture, Carol? And he's in the core of it. He's at the center of it. He and Adam Eggman are at the center of it. And so he's asking us to ask that question. And I really believe, personally, I don't think we've even begun to understand the depth of who Rudolf Steiner is and what he's becoming. Mm-hmm. He gives us all kinds of clues of what he is becoming. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have something that they would like addressed?
Well, I have, this is Sonia again, and I have one more question. Is I had read myself that Shore was supposed to bring this to the world too, but I never read why he was unable to do it. Can you direct me toward anywhere I might look for that?
Yeah, Sonia, it's in the Karma Lectures. And it's
okay.
because Carl Gerald Shore had, like many individualities in the Karma Lectures or around Rudolf Steiner, a real inability to bring their whole being into their body. Like Nietzsche. He said Nietzsche suffered from insanity because he couldn't bring this incredible spirituality that Rudolf Steiner experienced clairvoyantly when he first met Friedrich Nietzsche.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Schroer suffered the same thing. Now,
okay.
I point this to you. If you really want to get a handle on Schroer, just go pick up the mystery plays and follow the individuality Capacius.
Okay.
Because Capacius is modeled after Schroer, who was, you know, of course, Rudolf Steiner's college history teacher.
Right,
and he
right.
follows him in incarnation all the way back to the incarnation temple scene in Egypt. 14th century
who,
B.C.
Who in Egypt?
Pardon?
Who did you say he was in Egypt?
He's one of the Hierophants in an initiation rite in The Soul's Awakening.
Okay.
Because
okay.
there's dialogue in there about the future cultural age coming in Greece. So
okay.
on one side, you know, the temple scene, you know, went awry. On the other side, no, something occurred there was actually a premonition of the future. And
okay.
if there would have been the 5th, 6th, and 7th mystery plays, you would have had one, you would have had retrospections into Greece.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't he also say that it was because of the education that Carl Julius Schroer underwent that he wasn't able to, that it interfered with his development? I mean, isn't that one of the reasons why he brought Waldorf education? And he said that Parsifal would only incarnate if there was a suitable education for him to bring his gifts. So, and I think that he could see the devastating effect of the education of the time, which has even gotten worse, I'm guessing, from his time till now, and what the kids are exposed to today. So I think that was a main stumbling block for probably Carl Julius Schroer and probably a lot of us who've been through the public school system and didn't have the education of a Waldorf education.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the Karma Lectures, Carol, you've probably come across this, but when he talks about, you know, the 6th, 7th, 8th centuries A.D. over in Arabia, he talks about Harun al-Rashid and his great initiate counselor, who the two of them reincarnate in the 15th century A.D. as Bacon, the father of science, and Comenius, the father of education. They took the field for 500 years because Michael wasn't ruling above. And in their life as Harun al-Rashid and the great initiate counselor, they longed to unite with Aristotle and Alexander the Great, who were in the spiritual world, but they rejected the metamorphosed Aristotle and Alexander. So as John and Mary were at the cross in April 3rd, 33 A.D., Alexander the Great and Aristotle, the souls of these individualities experienced the Christ event from the sun sphere. And so with the coming of the Michael age,
now they grab the fulcrum, like when imagine somebody's trying to pull this lever that changes the track on a train. That's what Rudolf Steiner and Ida Wegman, but especially Rudolf Steiner, he was so alone in this to a degree, although Maurice Steiner was there, to pull that lever to get the train to go on the spiritual scientific track. And he says so many strong things in world history in the light of anthroposophy about the crisis that's there in the outer culture when millions of souls every night try to cross the guardian of the threshold. And very few could actually do it during the day in waking consciousness. And he says in those lectures that a few of us can wake. And then he talks about the anthroposophists, because they're already absorbing in imagination spiritual scientific content.
Thank you. Thank you. All of that was great. I mean, that did answer my question thoroughly. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Sonia.
Well, it's 9 o'clock now, so I think I'd like to close the conversation with a closing thought for those that need to leave. And if there's anybody that hasn't had a chance to speak that would like to say something, you're welcome to stay on and share afterwards for a few minutes. And then you can also email Eli and I, support@anthroposophyalive.com, anytime in between if you have questions, if you have anything that you want to share or request or whatever might be alive for you. That'd be great. So I'd like to close with a thought from Rudolf Steiner that he shared at the Christmas conference when it was coming to a close. And in the first line of it, he talks about the threefold being of the human being. And I'm guessing that when he's talking about this threefold being of the human being, he's really talking about Anthropos Sophia as our guide and our companion, who was birthed at the Christmas conference. So he says, "Let us seek in the threefold being of the human being, which teaches us love, which teaches us the universal imagination, which teaches us the universal thoughts. Let us seek in this threefold being the substance of universal love, which we lay as the foundation. Let us seek in this threefold being the archetype of the imagination according to which we shape the universal love within our hearts. Let us seek the power of thoughts from the heights, which enables us to let shine forth in fitting manner this dodecahedral imagination, which has of the foundation stone meditation, I'm guessing he's talking about, which has received its form through love. Then shall we carry away with us from here what we need." Rudolf Steiner from the Christmas meeting. So thank you everyone for coming and joining us. And we wish you a blessed epiphany and journey through the 40 days. And we will be joining you again in 2 weeks. And I just encourage you to practice this. I find this practicing this heart awareness as much as I can when I wake up in the morning, every morning before I go to sleep at night, and just stopping everything and putting my attention there and allowing that presence in the present to fill my heart, and knowing that I am love. And I would encourage you to cultivate that in your own way and in your own form through this beautiful season that we have ahead of us, despite all the outer trials and tribulations. So if anybody else wants to share, we'll stand for a few more minutes.
I need to go, but thank you, all of you, so much. So love and blessings, and it'll be good to reconnect in a couple weeks. So good night.
Good night, Carol. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Good night, and thanks again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Vivi.
Good night. And thank you all so much. Happy Epiphany to you. Thank you.
Good night, Vivian and Elia. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen. Glad you could join us.
And we'll be listening in 2 weeks. And I'll send you an email in the meantime about my interest.
All right, great.
Biography and astrology. Here we go. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Okay. Talk soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to shut the recording off. Maybe.
Bye-bye.